Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View with your not-so-humble host, PK. And this is a pre-recorded broadcast for Monday evening, September 19th. I've had the last several pre-recorded because I've been traveling, which is a great thing to do, especially if you're out of the country. You'll really get a perspective on things. As always, I want to thank BBSRadio.com for promoting free speech and especially alternative media, because you ain't going to hear this message and more through the controlled corporate pro-Zionist media. So, as always, I give thanks to BBSRadio.com. Today is part two of my interview with my longtime friend and mentor, Phil, who we spoke to last time. Phil was a former John Bircher member, and I met him 33 years ago. I used to play in his band, and he got to talking about stuff, and I was interested because of my background as being a liberal Republican, which, again, as a liberal Republican, I was for social tolerance and fiscal responsibility. I didn't care if people smoked pot and such. I was socially tolerant, as I said. So anyway, I want to welcome back my mentor, Phil. Phil, are you out there, sir?
It's good to be here.
Thank you for coming back to chat with the mighty PK. Now, last time we spoke, we hit on many topics. We did speak about Jewish power, about Zionism. We talked about Social Security, things like that. I jump around because I can. Don't want to lose the audience, though. But we're gonna refine it a little more this week. We're gonna focus more on actually World War I and World War II. And again, Jewish power. We'll talk about Zionism. We'll talk about Israel. We'll talk about Hitler and Stalin. And we're going to condense all this into an hour. So hang on to your seats, folks, because free speech reigns supreme here, as does the great Western tradition of free inquiry. And before I start, Phil, would you like some tea or coffee?
Some tea or coffee?
Well, sorry, it's self-service here, my friend.
Yeah.
So anyway, Phil, welcome back. What do you want to take off on? You want to start it with World War One?
Well, we can start just wherever you want to start.
Well, let's start with World War One, which was a disaster for the U.S., which led to the dissolution of the British Empire. As I've studied in the last couple of years, Germany was the winner by 1916, and you know, they should have just had an armistice and things should have just continued as they were, then it was further complicated by the fact that powerful Zionists and German bankers went to the British and said, look, you can still win this war, but you have to give us Palestine. Now, Palestine was part of the Turkish Empire, and Germany was in league with Turkey during World War II. And so the Zionist bankers told the British that we will bring America in on your side, but you've got to give us Palestine, which they agreed to through the Balfour Declaration. So with these powerful Jewish Zionist bankers of Germany, they were able to get the powerful Jewish media in the States and their hierarchy to promote through Wilson to get the U.S. involved in World War One. And this goes back to the fact when we heard Hitler say that the Jews stabbed Germany in the back, what he really meant was that these particular Jewish German bankers stabbed Germany in the back.
Right.
Am I correct, sir?
That is correct. You know, when I think of the beginning of the First World War, I keep thinking of the statement that Albert Pike, at that time was the head of the Freemasonry, that was talking about three world wars that they had planned for. And the First World War was to place the Zionist dictatorship in Russia. Of course, you know, that was accomplished by the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 during World War One. And of course, the second World War was for Russia to capture Europe, which we know happened. That happened in World War Two. And then the third was to be what they call for the Battle of Armageddon, where they were to put the Muslims against the Christians and the against the Christians, and of course they may occur shortly, using Iran as the pretext for a nuclear war, which can happen any time. And sure. I was thinking how they put the whole picture all together and how we've followed the pattern right to a T.
Yeah, let's back up a little bit here. First of all, I'd like to say that despite these powerful Jewish Zionists, and the things that they've done through history, many of which are these are Zionist criminals, I always like to say that regular rank and file Jewish people suffered terribly and died at the hands of these Zionist policies.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
So again, this is not a hate-o-rama. This is not an anti-Semitic rant. But expose on power regardless of who wields it or who yields it. Now, when I said let's back up to the failed 1905 communist revolution in Russia. And a lot of those communist Jews, atheist Jews, who were involved in this failed revolution, they fled, and a lot of them came back to Germany. And so throughout the years, they were pushing for their own Marxist ideology in Germany, which led us to post-World War I, when Germany had a major problem with over a million communist agitators who wanted to turn Germany into a Marxist dictatorship.
Sure.
And that's why the Nazis and the communists fought each other in the streets big time. So Germany had a big problem with communist infiltrators and those who wanted to, again, establish a Marxist regime in Germany. And most of the leaders, the intellectuals, the rabble-rousers, the agitators, these were atheist Jews. If not atheist Russian Jews, they were atheist German Jews. And Hitler knew this. And much of Europe knew this, and much of Germany knew this. So this had a lot to do with the German anger against German Jews.
Sure.
Yeah. So now we're in the 20s in Germany. We're in the 1920s.
Okay.
So let's take it from there. Then you had Hitler's slow rise to power in the 20s. Phil, I brought us up to the 20s, but I should have mentioned again that, and I think I did last time, that in 1916, you had the Sykes-Picot Agreement between British and French diplomats about how they would carve up the Middle East after World War I, and then in 1917, Britain had the Balfour Declaration, which promised Palestine to the Zionists after World War I.
That
so this
true.
Whole thing preceded the tragic imposition of Israel on Palestine in 1948.
Yes. That is correct.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So that brings us, that brings us to the 20s. And one of my biggest heroes, T.E. Lawrence of Arabia, he pleaded with the Allies at the Versailles Treaty Conference in Paris in 1919 not to colonize the Middle East. Because, he got stuck in the middle between the Arabs he was trying to help liberate from the Turks and the British government. But Lawrence, and rightly so, was in support of the Arabs' freedom, and he didn't want them to become switch from Turkish masters to British or European masters. So had the Allies listened to Lawrence, who spoke fluent Arabic and French, we wouldn't have this mess today, this hate-o-rama in the Middle East today that is all tilted towards Israel with their endless supply of free American-made murder weapons.
Right. And then in 1919 was when the Balfour Declaration was signed. I think it was 1919, yes.
It came out in 1917, and then at the Paris Peace Conference, perhaps that was when it was enacted in 1919.
Of course, that's when we had the Bolshevik Revolution that took place.
Which is largely Jewish influence, the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917-1918.
Oh, absolutely. And there's at least six.
And
or
as
six.
We know, Jacob Schiff, very wealthy American Jewish Zionist businessman, gave Trotsky, who was Jewish, $20 million for Jewish war relief in Russia. But he actually bought off the thugs and those who were in the front lines of the Russian Revolution.
That's right. And when we look at that, it's amazing how hardly none of that's mentioned in any of our history books in this country. And we had the murdering of over 66 non-Jewish people in the Soviet Union, at least 66 million. And when you looked at the Soviet prison camps, every one of them was under control of a Jewish leader. And somewhere here in my books, I have the names of every one of these leaders. There's over every one of the concentration camps they had where they were murdered in some of the most hideous ways possible. And of course, all that
these were the Jewish commissars.
Our history books, which is controlled by your Zionists today.
You're talking about in the camps. These were largely the Jewish commissars, atheist Russian Jewish commissars.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Well, I saw on the History Channel a few years ago in World War about World War II and Germany's invasion of Russia. It said that Hitler had given orders for the German army to especially weed out and execute the commissars. But it didn't say why on the History Channel. Now I understand why, because they were the architects of the murder of over 20 million Russian Christians before World War II.
Yeah, then think about after the Bolshevik Revolution, how many of those Zionists moved into Germany, which was being flooded with Zionists at the time. And, of course, Hitler was wanting other countries to take some of the Jews out of Germany, and nobody seemed to want to take up his offer. And of course, this comes on a few years later after that. But, you know, the propaganda was going in this country after that, that Hitler was this real mad leader of wanting to take over all of Europe. No, Hitler wasn't interested in taking over everybody. They had things going on in Germany he was trying to take care of.
Right. Well, and also... you had the same thing with the 20s. When Germany had the 1933 economic boycott forced on it by global Zionists, German Jews who lived in Germany were opposed to it. They were opposed to what Jews outside of Germany were trying to do.
Sure.
And they suffered because of that. They didn't want that going on. It was an eternal problem that Germany was trying to work through. And, of course, the Nazis cooperated with powerful Zionists who wanted to help the Nazis evict the Jews from Europe and give them a homeland, and they chose the Middle East. And they were all, of course, backed and financed by the Rothschilds.
Right. So, the Rothschilds, who were behind everything that was going on at that time.
Yeah. Now let's move into beginning of World War II in Europe.
Right.
In 1939, you had between the end of World War I, as I understand it, in 1939, the Poles killed over 60,000 German citizens who were living in areas that were former German populated areas before the Versailles Treaty gave it the territories to Poland.
Yes.
Poland even made saber-rattling comments to Germany, like they would kick Germany's butt and this sort of thing. So Hitler essentially invaded Poland to take back former German territories, especially that Danzig corridor to Danzig. And it should have been a short, concise war that was victorious for Germany, and that would have been the end of it. And that's also why Germany took back the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, which was created after World War I. Because there was large German populations who didn't want to live under foreign rule.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like I mentioned a while ago that Hitler's regimes, they started action to have the Zionists and the Jews deported out of the German area, and he was trying to free the German citizens from the bondage they were under. They were in a severe depression-type situation, and it was because of the Zionist control of the German economy at that time, and Hitler didn't wish a war, either local, European, or worldwide, like from 33 up until 1939. And his fundamental aim in foreign policy was to revise the very unfair and unjust treaty of Versailles through peaceful means. And in none of the German documents that was seized after the war was any support found for the notion that Hitler had any idea of attacking the United States then or in the future. And there was also, there wasn't any indication that he had planned to conquer England.
Or the world.
I'm sorry?
or even the world. They said he wanted to conquer the world. Even Pat Buchanan had a book out a few years ago showing that Hitler didn't have the Navy or the troops, and, you know, a lot of that was pretty much nonsensical.
Right. And you know, well, actually, when you look at the beginning of the Second World War, it was England that fired the first shot against Hitler. It wasn't the other way around. Or against
Germany. France declared war on Germany for invading Poland. And once again, England and France needed Uncle Sam's help to win a war that they picked, but they couldn't win by themselves.
Right.
And Hitler also admired the British Empire and the Royal Navy. He thought of the Brits as fellow Aryans, which they are. I mean, English is a Germanic language. There's a lot of German influence, the Anglo-Saxon influence in Germany, and the Nordic, you know, in England, and the Nordic influence in England, the Norsemen and the, you know, Viking, you know, ancestors of the Vikings.
Yes.
So, you know, England was an Aryan, basically an Aryan type nation, and Hitler did not want war with England, and that's why, as I understand it, he pulled back his panzers at Dunkirk because he could have destroyed the British expeditionary force. But he let him escape.
Right. You know, I think one of the best examples of that shows that Hitler wasn't seeking a conquest of Britain was the deal at Dunkirk in May of 1944. After the German tank divisions had overran northern France and cut off the British army from its base, Dunkirk was the only remaining escape port they had, and I got pictures of this where there was 60,000 British troops, for the British troops to escape from Dunkirk, where German forces had them both trapped and defenseless. It was Hitler that personally gave the order that he ordered all the tanks to halt for 3 days until the fleeing British could reach the port and organize themselves for evacuation out of there.
That it was a peace offering. Actually, you mean May of 1940.
No, Dunkirk was May of 1944, I think.
No, it was 1940. There wasn't 60,000 troops. I believe there was more like 330,000 troops.
Yeah, well, I just got this one picture.
So that's just that we just have a disagreement on the date, but yes,
yeah.
he pulled back his panzers and he let the BEF, the British Expeditionary Force, basically organize and withdraw.
Right, and go back to Britain.
Then Britain would have been probably knocked out of the war, and he wouldn't have the West giving him a hard time when the main problem was Russia and the Soviet plans to completely invade and occupy Western Europe.
Right. Yeah.
And he got bogged down in North Africa with Mussolini because they had that tripart agreement in 1940 between the Axis powers of Germany, Italy, and Japan. But even so, for the British to be fighting Mussolini in North Africa, it's kind of funny because, Mussolini, you know, I didn't obviously agree with him in invading Ethiopia in the mid-30s and then, you know, Libya, which is a former Italian colony. But for Britain and France to, think that they're above that, high and mighty, with all their empires, then and the brutality that was done in their empires to, you know, be down on Mussolini is, you know, the height of hypocrisy.
Yeah. And I was thinking, too, about in Great Britain, they were telling Roosevelt that, hey, we need some help. The Germans are kind of whipping us over here. And I think it was Roosevelt that told Churchill, well, you know, we have this feeling of isolation over here in America. And the only way we could come in and help you in a war against Germany would be by way of the back door. And, of course, by the back door, he meant cutting off all supplies and everything to Japan, because it's a little island out here depending on a lot of other countries for a lot of other things. They had an embargo around them, cut off all their supplies, did everything we could to intimidate them and get them to declare a war against us, so we could have that for an excuse to help out in the other theater in what was going on in Europe.
Roosevelt Roosevelt was scheming since the late 30s to get America involved in war. He did just the opposite of what he said he was going to do. He was especially scheming with Churchill in 39 and 1940. So
he kept telling the American people, they said, again and again and again, I tell you that I will not put our American forces into a war.
Foreign war,
like
yeah.
Wilson did that
in the meantime, he cut off, he embargoed Japan's oil and a lot of their raw material supply from the U.S., which is an act of war, and he did not have congressional approval for that. So he maneuvered Japan into World War II, and as you had mentioned previously when we spoke, or before we did this, when we do our sound check for tonight's show, how the U.S. had already broken the Japanese code.
Oh, right. Yeah, and with that code, the thing that's interesting about that is Roosevelt and his cabinet, they knew exactly the time and the date of the attack. And when I say attack, I'm talking about the so-called surprise attack at Pearl Harbor. Well, they knew that from these transmissions, is exactly when that was going to happen. And they keep referring that as a surprise. Well, a surprise to the American people. Well, it certainly wasn't any surprise to Roosevelt or General George Marshall or any of those people, because they knew that they cracked these codes, knowing everything that they was going to do and just win and everything. In fact, after decoding these messages, our intelligence knew that Hawaiian spies had told the Japanese every possible detail about our base at Pearl Harbor, so they knew what was going on both ends of things here.
And even before that, Roosevelt, against the advice of his admirals, he moved the American fleet from the West Coast on California to Pearl Harbor, which wasn't even an American state yet.
Well, and also FDR and General George Marshall removed most of our air defenses before the attack on Pearl Harbor, and only had about one-third of the necessary surveillance planes that was needed to protect the base in Pearl Harbor. And they also
carriers were conveniently out to sea that day.
Right.
the newer ships. And then the sad thing is, the two main commanders, I think one Navy and one Army, U.S. commanders, at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii, they were ridiculed and hounded out, and they weren't allowed to say their say. They've since been exonerated. I forget their names. Was one Hummel?
Oh, one of them was Admiral Kimmel, and the other was General Short.
Kimmel.
Yeah.
Right. They've been exonerated since then.
Yeah, they wasn't told anything. They were just left totally wide open.
They were left twisting in the wind.
That's right. That's just unreal.
You know, and I'm not sticking up for any of Japan's empire or cruelty, but it's the fact that they lied to the American, FDR lied and schemed the American people into this. Because an honest president, if he knew it was coming, of course, I don't like the reasons why they attacked, because they set him up for it, embargoing them, which, again, is an act of war, and it's illegal without constitutional, Congress had nothing to do with it. What would have happened if it was an honest knowledge of an attack that was unprovoked is that the U.S. Navy would have gone out to meet the Japanese Navy, and they'd have had their day.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's not how it came out. Time is the greatest friend of truth. So it's taken decades for this stuff to come out. And thank goodness for the Internet and revisionist history, which is not afraid to line up the facts with what happened with history.
Right, and these things have been kept from the American people too long. And saying these things, I know neither you or I we're not standing up for the things that Hitler or the Japanese did, because we know that they sure weren't perfect saints and everything that was going on.
Sure.
But I think the American people's only received one side of the whole story.
Oh, of course.
And
long story short, Hitler saved Western Europe from full-blown communist domination and the complete Soviet invasion of Western Europe.
Yes, he sure did.
So instead of declaring war against Germany, what should have happened was Britain and France should have stood with Germany against Stalin.
Yes.
retrospect, that's what I see should have happened.
Well, that kind of reminds me of what they say was the general feeling of General George. I can't think of name right now.
Patton.
Yeah, George Patton. I knew his daughter, Pat Hurley, who was on tour over through the United States. This was back in about 1980 or maybe a little after that, and she was revealing a lot of her father's feelings and saying that actually that her father, General Patton, he was wanting to rearm the German troops and drive them on into Russia to help wipe out the Zionist Jews that he calls the Bolshevik Revolution and all of that. And, of course, they wasn't going to allow that to happen. And
they could have destroyed Stalin and saved this whole mess.
That's right.
You know, it's been said that MacArthur would have met, you know, on the eastern side of Russia, would have met up with Patton in the middle somewhere.
That's right. And, of course, her opinion was that Patton was assassinated, and they had to put a stop to him for wanting to do any of these type of things. He wasn't going along with what the Zionist Jews wanted him to do. And that comes from his daughter, his own daughter.
Yeah, and if they had done that, for example, if the U.S. Army and rearmed Germany did drive Russia out of Eastern Europe, we wouldn't have had the mess we had today. But assuming they weren't arming Stalin at the same time, they probably would have easily crushed Stalin, because Stalin depended on Western aid for so much, boots, clothing, and munitions from the U.S., Britain, and Canada.
Sure. And we can see a similar thing.
So we've got Pearl Harbor attacks, Japan attacks the U.S. on December 7th, 1941.
Right.
Then shortly after that, Germany declares war on the U.S.
Right.
Have you read Hitler's speech about the declaration of war on the U.S.?
It's been a while, but I have. I can't remember.
I've read a lot of his speeches, and I read his speech why Germany declared war on the U.S., and I couldn't disagree with his reasoning, because the U.S., the Navy especially, thanks to Roosevelt's orders, and totally unconstitutional without any declaration of war, was to harass the German Navy, to shoot at German submarines, and they were protecting British convoys, but there was no declaration of war, and America at that time still did not want to be involved in foreign wars. The Pearl Harbor attack changed all that. But they did not want to be involved in these overseas wars. It was like over 80% of Americans did not want to be involved in the overseas wars. In fact, there are a lot of people in Britain, a lot of English people, that did not like Churchill. They didn't care for Hitler, but they didn't want to see Britain plunged into yet another costly, disastrous war, of which the end was that Churchill ended up destroying the British Empire, which he sought so much to preserve.
Yes. And I guess
so. Tell me about the World War II then, and the Zionists and the Russian side of things.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last statement there.
Let's talk about World War II, as it waged on, and the Holocaust and the Russian part of things.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, in World War II, I was thinking about, I think the year was 1943, that we could have ended that war. Well, this was the Japanese war. I was thinking about where they drug it on for a year and a half later than we needed to, and even let off the two bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki after they was already pleading to let them surrender, and the Japanese high command offered America its unconditional surrender, but we rejected it. And I'm getting ahead of myself here. But you was talking about the things going on in Germany.
Well, that's okay. You're in the Pacific Theater of World War II.
Yes. Yeah, I was jumped over to the other end of things here. But
well, they're all related.
It's all related, and just like we were talking about the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. Well, we agitated, like we said a while ago, we agitated the Japanese into doing just that. And so I've forgotten now what you was thing about...
Well, we're moving on to World War II in Europe during the war years and the Holocaust and the reason for the camps and such.
Yeah, well, the camps at the so-called Holocaust, those were work camps, and the people who had their... they were working for the German cause in the war, and
it was forced labor. But they were just, you know, the supply lines were destroyed by the Allies, so the camps couldn't get food and medicine.
Right. Yeah, we cut off the supply lines, and when they found those that were starving, as things is because of our troops, not because of anything Hitler was doing to them. In fact,
and a lot of the corpses in the camps that they found after the war, the dead bodies, they were not riddled with bullets. They starved to death or died of disease.
Right. They had this typhus epidemic that was going on not only in the camps, but even among some of the general public there. And they had hospitals and doctors, both with Jewish doctors as well as German doctors that was trying to help save the lives of the people working in these camps, because actually they needed these. They weren't trying to gas these people. They needed these people for the workforce there to help the Nazi cause at that time. It's just a complete
picture.
What we've been giving them, and they were very well took care of, because a lot of those doctors and nurses in the hospitals was needed for own military people, and here they were using them to take care of the Jews. Now, they wouldn't do that if they were wanting to exterminate all the Jews in Germany. In fact,
no. The other question I have is, you know, after the war, you see all these emaciated people in the camps standing by the wire.
Yeah.
Why weren't they killed? Why weren't they just all killed?
Yeah.
That's not how it worked. Yes, there was a lot of murder and genocide going on, and there was a lot of Jews and others killed in pits. Shot in pits that they dug in Eastern Europe by, you know, some of Hitler's underlings. I still think that some of this stuff that Hitler would not have condoned, because that was not the master plan. It was the eviction and evacuation of Jews out of Europe. It was not their extermination, as I understand it.
Right, and look how the things went at the camps. I know it was no paradise working there. Due to the war situation, but they had swimming pools at Auschwitz and some of the other places. They had entertainment, a lot of the Jewish as well as German orchestras and all kinds of entertainers to come in to entertain them, and they were very well took care of in that respect. And they had given special script type money where they had freedom to go shopping and do things that they wanted to do. We have video films that was taken right in the prison camps that shows that this was the situation, that they were under a war situation, that actually they were well taken care of with the best of hospital and doctor care. And why would they go all that trouble if these people they was going to murder and do away with?
Right. Well, you know, we mentioned this our last interview. You gave me the DVD of this. It's quite revealing. I think it's
right.
The earlier part of the year of the war, perhaps before the, you know, the supply lines were destroyed. But it clearly shows the Jews with their with the yellow star stitched to their clothing. But they're playing sports. They're playing soccer. It shows them working, sewing in the gardens. It shows their entertainment areas and all this sort of stuff.
That's right.
And I'm sure a lot of the brutality and starvation and the disease came later. But, you know, a lot of the regular German people outside of the camps, you know, at the peak of the war and towards the end of the war, they weren't much better off than the inmates in the camps.
That's true. Very true.
You know, and also, here's the question I pose. You know, Roosevelt, unconstitutionally again, through his damn presidential orders, he ordered the internment of a couple hundred thousand Japanese. In 1942, in these camps in Colorado, probably desolate areas of California and whatnot. Now, what would have happened to those Japanese American citizens had the supply lines and the roads and the infrastructure to those camps been destroyed? They too would have been deprived of food and medicine. They too would have suffered and starved and died.
That's right, and it's been told that they were treated a lot worse than what the Jews were treated in the concentration camps in Germany.
I've heard that, yeah. Yes, and also let's talk about the so-called gas chambers, which people were supposedly gassed in.
There's no evidence that anybody was put to death in a gas chamber in Germany. Now, I know that's a shock to the American people and think, oh, that can't be the... For all these stories, well, you know, we could bring in the Talmud, how they're told to lie about anything to the non-Zionist, and that's okay. But actually, well, even the General George Patton and others who went over there to check things out right after the Second World War ended, and even conferred with some of the Red Cross people over there, said there was no evidence that there was a gas chamber anywhere where people were being gassed to death in them. But there was one that was built at Auschwitz after the war was over that wasn't even connected to the building which was strictly for the tourists that went through there and tried to show that, well, here's how they were gassed. And there's so many different things have been written on that. And even General Patton himself said there was no evidence at any of the camps that anybody was killed in the gas chambers. Now, that particular gas that they said they used to kill them with, now, that was used to delouse the clothing that the prisoners had that had this typhus disease and other things. It was used for that, but...
For delousing.
The delousing, yeah, but none of that was used. Well, they never even had the facilities where they could even kill off over 6,000 people.
Oh, yeah, the numbers themselves wouldn't stack up to the methods used. It wouldn't work.
No way that was even possible there, and that's been proven by so many different specialists that have checked all of that out. It's just been falsified in all of our books of history, and the truth has never been told.
Yeah, so essentially those so-called gas chambers were delousing chambers for clothing and bedding, which are overwhelmed with lice from typhus. That's why
exactly.
The heads were shaved of the prisoners.
That's right.
And yes, there were crematoriums, many crematoriums, to dispose of the dead bodies who died mainly from starvation, disease, forced labor, and war.
That's right. And that's all.
And now, if we had this discussion, or even wrote this in Europe, most European countries nowadays, we'd be probably thrown in jail for a Holocaust denial. And I don't deny that millions of people died. There was genocide and murder and torture and many different things, but. The details I question so much, and exactly why, what happened, how it happened. Powerful Zionists, with their lies and their legacy, have tried to twist this into something that it wasn't exactly as they've said it is. Yes, there was a lot of brutality, a lot of Jews suffered. I'm not denying that at all. And today, and even our last interview, I am not espousing any hatred towards Jews. Like I'm fond of saying, some of my greatest heroes were Jewish intellectuals, especially Ludwig von Mises, Ayn Rand, and Murray Rothbard. I wish them no harm.
No.
You know, in fact, last year I had a brilliant Jewish doctor do a detached retina surgery on my eye. I would never see one him to be harmed at all, you know. So that's how I, you know, do the talk and do the walk. You know, there's no hatred in what I'm talking about, nor advocating any hatred, and neither is there coming from you.
No. Of course.
But they try to conflate the two, the Zionists and whatnot, just like they try to say nowadays that Israel's interests are the same as America's interests. Well, hell, they are. They're not the same. And Iran is not America's problem. It's not even Israel's problem if they wouldn't instigate it and try to cause more problems and draw the U.S. into it. And then, of course, the international Zionist bankers in the background, the Rothschilds, and their connection to the Rockefellers and whatever remaining Morgan interests there are, they're the ones who profit from all this.
Oh, absolutely.
As Pat Buchanan says, it's not Jewish kids who are dying in these wars for Israel. It's American Gentile kids.
That's right. And I was thinking, too, about we're talking about all the lies we've been told about things. I was thinking about the very popular Anne Frank diary that they keep pushing in this country, when the handwriting experts have declared that the diary was written, well, all of it was written by the same person they're saying, but they're saying that part of it was written with a ballpoint pen, and that was determined by a group called the BKA Laboratories, and they're bringing out the fact that the ballpoint pen wasn't available. It didn't come on the market until the year 1951, and Anne Frank died in 1944. So what is that? It's been almost seven years before a ballpoint pen was ever even invented, and she didn't
and
die.
She died in a hospital from typhus.
From the typhus disease that was spread all over Germany at the time. And she was given one of the best hospitals and some of the best doctors that took care of her. And I think her father, well, I guess he was quite a character. I think he lived to be about 91 or quite a ripe old age.
I don't know.
And anyway, I'd say that's pretty good for somebody that supposedly went through all they tried to say that he did.
Well, and there's all these Holocaust survivors. What's that all about? There's all these Holocaust survivors. I thought, you know, everybody perished, but apparently, you know, they didn't. And I'm sure a lot of these Holocaust survivors have told a lot of lies or fabricated things or told what they thought they saw, but the facts don't line up.
No, they don't. They say there's only about 5 million Jews in Germany at about the time this all started, and look how many more there were at the end of it. I'm sorry?
500,000.
Was it 500,000? Yeah.
And I think that the Red Cross said there was even less than 6 million in all of Europe. Even the Red Cross numbers conflict with what the Zionists have told us.
Yeah, it's a Red Cross figure I was thinking of. I was thinking it was about 5,000 they were talking about, which was less than 6,000, of course.
No, 500,000.
1,000, that's right, yeah.
So my message to Jews would be, you know, I know that you've suffered some persecution throughout the centuries, but if you really look into this and you stand with the anti-Zionist Jewish forces and you look into this, you'll see that, yes, there was a lot of suffering, but not exactly how and why and where you've been led to believe it has happened.
Right.
And a lot of the same stuff happened in the war in the Pacific. Forced marches, forced labor, deportation. Genocide, murder, you know, there was a lot of, war has a lot of killing, but there was a lot of civilians killed, a lot of Germans killed, especially after the war. Look at all the German prisoners who were killed by U.S. and other forces.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is all coming out now. It'll continue to come out, and we're going to be with the forces that said, you know, we told you so, and this sort of thing, and we're not going to back away from what we think is the truth. But
that's
mixed
right
in with what we have to say is not advocating violence or murder, hatred, or genocide. It is a constant expose on power, which I continuously say it's an expose on power. Because,
right,
of course, this whole discussion would be labeled anti-Semitic by a certain crowd. But
look how the German people was treated after the war was all over from 1945 on up to 1950, how the German people was treated. I mean, they were murdered, they were raped, and the women and children, and how they were murdered, and how some of our troops, and they say the Russian troops were even worse in their treatment of the German people after that, that was far surpassed anything that could happen in any of the prison camps before the war ended, and all that's been left out of our history books, too.
Right, and just the general brutality of Stalin, I mean, people know about it. You know, there's been a lot of Christian persecution and murder in different areas in the world, but that has never come to the forefront like Jewish persecution, and that's because of Jewish control of the media and the press and the major newspapers. You know, the Italians never had that kind of power, you know.
Yeah.
They're very powerful in the media and, of course, Hollywood. And just to mention that, oh, you're anti-Semitic, but, you know, there's even Jews who've said it's true.
Sure. Yeah, there's
are you familiar with, have you heard about David Cole? David Cole goes to Auschwitz. He's a young Jewish fellow.
That's right. He checked out the situation in the so-called concentration camps in Germany, and he had a complete different picture to paint of it. How they could have possibly been gassed the way they and the gas chambers he checked out.
Oh, he exposes it. He goes in right into the so-called gas chambers and shows you that wooden door. He says, what's that all about?
Yeah, wooden door.
Well, you know, he was ridiculed and he was attacked and threatened by powerful American Zionists.
Yeah.
And he backed away or recanted some of it. But, you know, he was right on the money.
That's right. And
he was Jewish. I think he wore his little skull cap when he was there at Auschwitz.
Right, yeah.
He shows the swimming pool. I mean, it's on YouTube. All the episodes are there, you know?
Yeah, we have
and
that
of course,
on DVD.
He'll be called a self-hating Jew. That's the mechanism that immediately kicks in. You're a self-hating Jew or you're an anti-Semitic Jew.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, it's very predictable, you know? So I haven't clashed with any Zionists or Jews yet on my show. I'm looking forward to that day. And, you know, of course they're going to call me all these names. And, I'll, again, like I mentioned last interview, okay, call me all these names, get it out of your system. Okay, now let's talk about the facts and the history.
Well, you know, one that has confronted them about that, they won't talk about the exact figures they're talking about. They just ended up calling them anti-Semitics and things like that and slamming them. But they don't want to touch the facts of what's really went on, what the Jews themselves have even admitted, those that realized what really did go on. And
right, well, there's been a lot of criminal Jews amongst the Jewish population, criminal Zionist Jews, awful criminals, including Murder Incorporated in the U.S. That was a very big Jewish mafia thing. Italians have had criminals. Greeks have had criminals. English, every race, tribe, different peoples have had criminals in their midst of their own people. And I freely admit that. Me saying that Al Capone was a saint would be, you know, complete BS. But when it comes to Jewish criticism or Zionist criticism, all of a sudden, oh, you can't do that. Well, you know, I'm not afraid to talk about it because I'm objective. I'll mention the whole package, you know.
It's like we have freedom of speech to talk about anything in this country unless it's condemnation of the Zionist Jews. But that we can't talk about. It's amazing.
Oh, I know. But that's thanks to the Internet. That's coming away. And even my... My debates on Facebook with people who are, you know, we got to defend Israel and mixed in with this whole U.S. military thing. I said, well, you know, show me in the, you know, Israel's not our 51st state, and please show me in the U.S. Constitution where it says the American taxpayer is supposed to endlessly supply Israel with foreign aid and free American-made murder weapons.
Right.
And by the way, I want to cut off foreign aid to all foreign countries, especially Israel. And I would, even though I'm for free enterprise and a free market, I wouldn't really mind an arms embargo against the rest of the world because all these weapons that we sell, much of which are subsidized by the American taxpayer, this stuff comes back to haunt us through civil wars in other countries that the Pentagon likes to get us involved in the military-industrial congressional complex.
Right. And I've heard reports that we give Israel approximately $9 billion a year, and I say why? What for? And I noticed too that the main leaders of the movement of the Zionist Jews has taken over Israel. That 95% of them are atheists that have taken it over. But they're the ones that say we are God's chosen people. And I mean, they really make a play on those words, and they know the Zionist backers.
As you know, as I mentioned last time, I myself am I'm a non-militant atheist. So,
yeah.
So that gives me a little cred with the Jewish background because so many Jews are purely secular, agnostic, or atheistic.
Right.
But I harbor no hatred towards them. But I'd like to expose what's going on. And the fact the founders of Israel were socialist, communist, atheist. Eastern Europe, you know, European and Russian Jews, white Russian Jews with really no Semite. They're not even Semitic people. But, you know, I've condensed it to this. God gave us this land, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. Well, how hypocritical is that? If they don't believe in God, how did God give them the land? And they can continue to schmooze American Christian Zionists, making them think, oh, we got to support Israel. We got to back Israel.
Yeah, see, I'm not condemning the fact that 95% of those that controls Israel claim to be atheists. What I'm condemning is the fact that they're the ones that turn around and making the most hay out of the idea that we're God's chosen people when supposedly they don't believe in God, but yet they're using that term to see to it that these, like the Zionist evangelistic people over here that still think that's God's chosen people, that means we can't bomb or we can't go to war against Israel in any way because we'll lose that battle. That's why they make a play on that. As of being very hypocritical in their own belief there.
Yeah, well,
they have the right to believe where they want to.
Right from the Khazars, and I think that they've hijacked the Jewish religion for their own purposes.
Well, they did.
And I'm more afraid of Israel than Iran, afraid in the sense that they have over 200 nukes, and they've got this damn Samson option named after, the biblical Samson. These atheists just use that to use Samson in their terminology for this, which is if Israel feels like it's going down in a war or whatever, they're going to take others with them. They got missiles probably pointed at London, Paris, Rome, Moscow. I mean, look where they're situated. They can hit China.
Absolutely.
They can hit so many countries and just take them with them. That's their mentality, a lot of these radical Zionists.
And then we give Israel what was about 400 nuclear warheads, and they have a fit if Iran comes up with just one thing. Well, what are they supposed to defend themselves with? And I think Ron Paul very well brought that out, and when they had the presidential candidates talking on television a few weeks ago. I mean, I think we should be helping Iran, not the other way around. Of course, I know American people, we've been programmed to not think that way, but I think that we all be backing Iran, not Israel. They're the ones
I hate the way it's programmed. I mean, Iraq or Saddam was not my enemy.
No.
Iran is not my enemy. I don't want to hear the Zionist media tell me our enemy's Iran. Iran is not my enemy.
Absolutely.
I like to paraphrase Muhammad Ali, who said, "No Viet Cong ever called me nigger. No Iranian or Iraqi called me Dago or WAP, and I wouldn't care anyway because it's not worth involving the death and destruction of hundreds of thousands of people and millions of refugees."
Well, just like the 9/11 thing, they want to blame all that on the Arabs or the Muslims, which
Islam,
I think the truth is it didn't have a thing to do with it. It was the dancing Israelis we saw celebrating after it was over, and the people that was involved in it, they found that most of them are still alive somewhere that they claim had a part in it. That's supposed to be dead.
I believe that Israel's Mossad's fingerprints are all over 9/11. I believe that Mossad and maybe radical elements of the CIA, Black Ops, Special Ops, they were involved, as was Cheney in 9/11.
Absolutely. Yes, those people should be serving a prison term as a result of it, and there's been many good books that came out exposing that. And Victor Thorne has one that shows the Israeli involvement in the 9/11 thing and how they could have complete control of everything and bringing off. How can a little guy over in the middle of a desert have control over the many things that precisely had to work at exactly the right times for that to be pulled off to begin with?
Well, I think Osama bin Laden had next to nothing to do with 9/11, and ever since 1948, Israel has used the Holocaust as an excuse to do whatever they want. But since 1948, between 1948 and probably 1970, China's Mao murdered about 60 million people.
That's right, and who is it that built him up? The United States did. We're the ones that really put him in power, and he's holding back Chiang Kai-shek. And I saw that very much in the Korean War when I was over there. And look what kind of a war that was. They call that a policy of containment. They had the 38th parallel, and we had to stay below the 38th parallel, or if we lost half of our troops going north, that way we got orders to retreat to come back to the 38th parallel. And here General MacArthur had enough troops together, he could run them all the way into the Manchurian border and have the war over with within weeks any time that we wanted to. And of course, he got fired for disobeying presidential orders. And I remember, too, when I was over there, they had our 7th Fleet down there actually keeping Taiwan, the nationalist Chinese, from coming up there and getting the war over with force and and winning the thing and saving lives on both sides of the fence. And they weren't about to allow that to happen because they know that the longer we can keep any war going, the more money that your international banksters, the Zionist bankers, are going to make off of a conflict like that.
Yeah, and they're tied in with the U.S. military-industrial congressional complex. So
exactly.
What I've learned is, last century, and even the century before, only by 2 years, the Spanish-American War, all of these wars were not necessary for the U.S. to be in, and the globalists of the day, including Wilson and then later FDR, they helped to enable and, get the U.S. fraudulently involved in these wars and get a lot of Americans killed and other ones. Now, it's all wrapped up in patriotism. You know, I appreciate our vet service and everything, but it's all the lies that were told, and they, you know, fought for lies for the most part.
Yeah, and, you know, the American people, we failed to follow the money trail and to realize that every war we've been involved in was financed on both sides by your international Zionist bankers.
That's true. And the mess we're in today is the Zionist bankers. And, you know, and the radical, or the Talmudic Jews, those we talked about the Talmud, that awful book, last interview. But, you know, you had Greenspan, who caused this mess, and then Bernanke, who's making it worse, you know, and they're tied into the Zionists and the Rothschild banking establishment.
They were all working together. Yes.
Well, look at the bailouts, you know, Sachs and all these big, you know, Wall Street banks and whatnot, they're bailed out by the American taxpayer.
And the
Zionist crowd and their Gentile partners, they're ripping us off big time.
Oh, absolutely.
And Obama's a willing servant of those. He might as well just be a mixed-race skull and bones member.
Yeah, he's just being used as a puppet like many of the others have been.
Well, he was groomed by Brzezinski, the trilateralist, and the Rockefeller, you know, associate, David Rockefeller's boy.
Oh, absolutely. He'd been groomed for that position for many years before it was ever given to him.
In fact, if I ever got to meet Clinton, I'd say, you know, President Clinton, we're against Carroll Quigley. We resent Carroll Quigley. He may have exposed all this stuff in, what was that? I can't think of, all of a sudden, I can't think of the name of that book. But you condoned it. Quigley condoned it. And we're opposed to all that.
That's right.
Tragedy and Hope. You read that
Tragedy
book.
Tragedy and Hope, that's right. I was trying to think of that.
I know you're very well read on all this stuff. You're more well read than I am, but I certainly have the gist of it. Plus, I have an economics background, and I'm largely self-taught on this stuff.
I had a bookstore, and we were selling the book, selling his book, not because we agreed with it, but just let the people see what he was saying, how true it really was.
Of course. You know? So that's where I see things going, too. And I wonder how I'm doing on time here. Is my producer out there listening?
I think we've been going about an hour.
Yeah, so I think it's probably time to wind this down. I know you've got some things you got to do. I'm going to wind this down anyway because it's my show and I can do what I want, Phil. What do you think about that? So have you enjoyed our discussion?
I'm sorry?
Have you enjoyed our discussion?
Oh, yeah. I think I was a little rattled on some of it. I think I sounded nervous or something, but I got relaxed.
You're still my mentor, and you filled in a lot of the puzzle. But I'd like to have you back again in the near future. We'll do this again sometime.
Oh, my. Yeah. We'll give it a rest
for a while. In the meantime, I just want you to keep doing what you're doing, spreading the word out. You're well-read. I can always consult you about things. Of course, I don't agree with everything you have to say, nor are you with me, but, you know, that's...
I'm sure.
We're still on the main page. We're still on the same page for about 90% of this. And
sure.
We both love and support Ron Paul, and
right.
We reject those who would say that, based on what you've just said, you're anti-Semitic and hateful and racist, so Ron Paul must be, too. That's a bunch of nonsense.
Well, and, you know, I don't know of any author of any book, hardly, that I can say I totally agree with on everything. It just don't happen that way, but, you know, things we do agree on, we need to work together on it and all of that. And of course, I don't think we disagree that much on the whole overall picture.
Therefore, I look forward to the destruction, the absolute destruction of the American empire and the rebirth of the American republic.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
Yeah. And with that, Phil, I'm going to say thank you and good night, sir. Thank you for coming back to Third Stream View. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening here on Third Stream View. I'm your host, PK.
Well, thanks for having me
every
on.
Every Monday evening at bbsradio.com.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me write that down.
10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern.
Wait a minute.
Next week, this is your host, PK, saying good night.